Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. Brighton Council put aside $100,000 to create an environmental sustainability plan in 2025. The goal is to find ways the municipality can contribute to the fight against climate change. Councillor Jeff Wheeldon is leading the charge. He wants residents to mirror the town's efforts as part of a local initiative to help the environment. In this interview, Wheeldon will explain what is going on and what people can do, along with justifying the time and expense. He will also explain the role of the Environmental Sustainability Committee and its involvement. I'm so pleased to have with me today Brighton Councillor Jeff Wheeldon. Welcome back to Consider This Northumberland.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
What is an environmental sustainability plan?
Well, there are a lot of different things that can fall under that heading. And so part of the challenge is deciding exactly what it is that we need now. In the past, a lot of municipalities have had something called a climate action plan. And I've been advocating that Brighton have something like that for a number of years now. What we are working on right now is an integrated community sustainability plan, which is kind of a subset of environmental plan that focuses on determining what exactly the community needs within the municipality of Brighton to have a sustainable future. And sustainability can include a number of things. That can include environmental sustainability in terms of, for example, our food systems. We're an agricultural community that relies on our natural environment for a big part of our economy. That can mean ensuring that we are resilient to climate change as it unfolds. You know, we saw major flooding in 2017 and 2019, and we know that there are some hazards like that that we need to be prepared for. And so it's an opportunity to look at everything that we do in the municipality of Brighton and make sure that we can continue to do so ever after. And it will be followed by a plan that is more specifically aimed at reducing our greenhouse gas emissions as well.
On paper, that all sounds wonderful. But how does it apply, though, to people's daily lives? What are the kinds of things that if I was a citizen, I'm going to see that's different in my world?
Well, I think that people rely on municipalities for things that they can otherwise safely ignore. They rely on us to do the things that they don't have to think about, such as making sure that the infrastructure that they use every day is there for them, making sure that their garbage gets out on time, things like that. So when we talk about what will this do for people, ideally, it's things that people won't have to think about or notice until they need it. So, for example, one of the things we might be looking at is how do we transition to a type of pavement that is more resilient to the freeze-thaw cycle when we have more days that hover around that 0 degree mark and maybe go from -5 to +5 in a day. That wears our roads faster. And so do we have a way of addressing that? Or thinking about in the summertime when it's hitting new record temperatures, do we have a cooling center in the community where somebody who doesn't have home air conditioning is able to find some respite from the heat without getting sick? In the wintertime, do we have access to emergency services if we have another blizzard like we did at Christmas a few years back? Those kinds of things are the things that we want to be planning for now so that as they become more common, as we can expect them to with climate change, people won't notice that there's a lack of municipal services there because we will have anticipated it.
With all the issues that are going on within the municipality of Brighton and the world at large, why do you need an environmental sustainability plan at all? Is that a really good way to be spending your money and resources at this particular time?
Well, something I've noticed about environmental action, Rob, is that it never seems like it's a good time. When I was a kid, there was something called the Kyoto Protocol that, had it been implemented then, we wouldn't be having this conversation today. But there was always something slightly more important or more pressing. We talk about things like the cost of living and tariffs and things like that being top of mind for people today. But we rely on the regular cycle of seasons, and if we don't plan for changing with them as they change, then we're going to have bigger problems than just tariffs that will impact our cost of living. So the time is always now for people to be thinking of these things within municipal governments and within every level of government, so that regular folks don't have to.
But why municipalities? This seems like a bigger picture problem, maybe provincial, national, international.
That's a great question, and one that people have been asking for a long time now. And I've heard municipal councils all over the place saying things like, this is an international issue, it's too big for our little town. But the reality is that the way government works, change happens one town at a time. Municipal government is nested within provincial government, and it's where the rubber meets the road. So yes, there is a provincial ministry of environment and climate change. There's a federal ministry, and both of these levels of government have a lot of resources and regulations and structures within which we can carry out our activities. But the real change happens here on the ground at the municipal level. And that's true of almost every issue.
Well, speaking of resources, what about the cost associated with this? What sort of cost are we looking at here?
Well, the municipality of Brighton budgeted $100,000 in last year's budget for this integrated community sustainability plan. We actually 2 years ago budgeted $60,000, but didn't get a chance to spend it. And we upped it to $100,000 last year and got the request for proposals out, successfully awarded the bid to SIEC Partners, which is a consulting group out of Montreal. And so this year we're spending that $100,000. Now, one of the challenges with that and opportunities is funding, because there are often funds that are available. So, for example, the Green Municipal Fund is a multi-billion dollar fund that's governed by the Federation of Canadian Municipalities. And it's often possible to get Green Municipal Fund funding just for plans themselves. And so I know that our partners are looking into that. But even if we don't get that funding, we have bitten the bullet and said we're going to spend up to $100,000 on this anyway to make sure that we get it done. Because once we have the plan in place, then we often have access to funding for specific parts or projects. So the implementation can often be funded. And as I say, that the Green Municipal Fund is just one of many funds out there, but there are often multi-million dollar funding opportunities available for things like greening our own municipal fleet, greening our buildings in terms of using heat pumps for heating or things like that, potential energy generation grants where we could set up municipal energy generation through solar or wind. There's a lot of different opportunities out there. And if we are not prepared to seek that funding, we won't get any of it. So the plan is really the first step to unlock opportunities for us.
Describe the process that you went through to get to this point.
Well, if we want to take it all the way back in 2020-ish, trying to remember exactly when, I brought a delegation to council long before I was a councillor, suggesting that Brighton start an environmental sustainability advisory committee, because at that time we had no one on staff, no committee, and no real initiatives to address climate change or environmental sustainability within the municipality. As you had said earlier, people would say, well, this isn't a municipal issue, this is a federal or international issue. But I recognized that without anyone within our municipality specifically there for this reason, to ask these kinds of questions, we would continue to pass on this kind of action. So I brought a delegation to council, and the previous council agreed and set up an Environmental Sustainability Advisory Committee. That committee has continued to today. I am now the chair of that committee as a councillor, and I am proud of the work that that committee has done to keep environment and sustainability top of mind for the municipality and for council. Within that, we have advocated as a committee for resources to be spent on environmental sustainability projects like this plan. We've also engaged with groups like Nature Canada, which is currently advocating for a national marine conservation area off the Presque Isle Point area and around Prince Edward County region. So opportunities like that to just pay attention to the natural world around us and recognize it as an asset that we enjoy and that we should preserve just to continue to bring value to our community through that. Ultimately, Rob, the main thing that we needed to do to get this plan going was just to fund it. And so one of the first things I did when I was on council in our first budget was to suggest that we do this. As I say, council did award $60,000 in that first budget this term. We didn't have an opportunity to spend it then. We had a lot of other stuff going on. As I said, there's always something that seems more important at the time. In that our second budget, I pointed out that Port Hope was going to spend $90,000. Could we do a little better? And so we budgeted $100,000 and managed to get the ball rolling.
Thank you for mentioning Port Hope, because that was going to be my next question. Port Hope has a climate action plan, which it passed recently. Are you familiar with that plan?
Just in broad strokes. I know that they had a smaller plan before, and they reinvested in that because they wanted something more robust. We've also been in talk over the last few years with, or at least I have been, through the Northumberland Tamarack Climate Cohort. A bunch of us councillors from different municipalities work together with members of environmental committees and engage in a program through an organization called Tamarack to advocate for the environment together in Northumberland. And through that process, we've been encouraging each other and supporting each other in our respective municipalities. And we came together also to connect with Corey McKay, the sustainability officer for Northumberland County, asking her, can you please prioritize collaboration in the way that you're designing the county's plan so that we can be prepared to work together from across the county? She's been great to work with. I know Coburg has a plan. I'm not deeply familiar with it either, but I do know that there are people in every municipality that are looking at what each other is doing and saying, okay, let's make sure that we are open to working together.
Some of the features of the Port Hope plan include things like energy efficiency and reducing waste. They're looking at buildings and transportation and waste and agriculture and land use and renewable energy and nature-based solutions. Are these things that you're considering as well?
We are in very early stages. I can tell you we've met once with our planning consultants, and their approach is to really emphasize community engagement and hear what residents of Brighton are interested in this regard. But all of those categories are things that definitely fall within the sustainability lens. So we're going to be looking at how can we do that to make our own municipal operations more efficient. You know, you mentioned energy efficiency, but transitioning our fleet to an electric fleet, for example, saves a tremendous amount of energy and money. So doing things like that as a municipality through our operations, but then also looking at how can we help residents to do the same thing? Are there energy incentive programs that we can offer at a municipal level? Often that's larger cities that do that, but I think that it's possible to do that at a small town level as well.
So if you're thinking of along the same lines, why not just take the Port Hope plan and a little bit of the Coburg plan and a little bit of this and a little bit and just put it into a plan of your own for the municipality and be done with it? Why do we need to go and hire a consultant and go through all of these machinations of public consultation and getting everybody talking about it? Why not just have a plan for the municipality and take all the good stuff and get it done?
Well, there I'm sure will be an aspect of that. You know, nobody needs to reinvent the wheel. And most of our policies start with our staff or whatever consultants we hire looking around and saying, what's everybody else doing? And how can we take the best of that and apply it here? But if you want to have something that's going to be truly effective, it needs community buy-in, not just because people need to continue to support a plan like that from one term of council to another, but also because the biggest effect that a municipality can have is not what happens in our own operations, but in what we can inspire and support within the community. You know, in terms of we mentioned earlier the fleet. The municipality has dozens of vehicles, but there are probably a few thousand of them in the municipality of Brighton in terms of the community. So if we can be a leader in transitioning to EVs, as just one example, and find ways to support energy efficiency for our residents, then we are going to have a much larger impact than if we just focused on our own fleet and on our own operations. You know, we want to make sure that we are inspiring change and supporting change as regular folks are making their own decisions about energy efficiency and sustainability in their lifestyle and our local economy.
Well, forgive me, but it makes sense when you talk about, you know, the pavement and the EV vehicles and all that. It makes sense. You guys can make a decision amongst your group. You get your staff to implement it because it's a decision of council. That seems really straightforward. But the moment you want residents to do this and do that and be inspired and et cetera, you know, I can hear in the back of my head some of the residents going, you know what, just leave us alone. You do what you think's important to the environment. Let me do my own thing. How do you respond to those people?
Well, you know, for a lot of those people, Rob, that's totally fine. We're not here to force anything on people. But I hear from people all the time who want to do things and don't necessarily know where to start, who want to be part of a larger solution, who want to vision our future together, those kinds of things. So it's not that we're going to try and set up a program and force everybody to go through it, but rather we want to create the conditions where it's easier for people to make positive changes that are good for all of us. So there's a certain aspect of neighborliness to it, but there's also an aspect of sometimes as a municipality, we can leverage access to funding or we can leverage access to technologies at a scale that individuals couldn't. And so those who want to participate in that, we can make it easier for them to do so.
What is the role of the Environmental Sustainability Committee in all of this?
Sure. It is an advisory committee. And so as an advisory committee, its main purpose is to make sure that they're available to advise council on matters that are beyond the scope of, frankly, what our staff expertise includes. We don't have an environmental sustainability officer on our municipal staff, but we do have some very qualified people from within our community who have backgrounds in biology and conservation, climate change and climate science, things like that. And so we have brought a number of those people together who have volunteered. They've applied to be a member of this committee. And so when an environmental matter comes before council, ideally it gets referred to the committee in advance so that we can provide comment or recommendations to council. Because oftentimes these issues are quite complex. They do need a little bit more research and expertise than individual councillors can or should put in. And so this is an opportunity to make sure that council can make an informed choice on something that we don't necessarily have in our staff expertise pool.
How many members are there on the committee?
There are two councillors, five residents, and two or three staff, depending on the meeting.
Can you give me some examples of the recommendations made that were implemented by this committee?
Sure. I mean, funding is a big one, wanting to make sure that we continue to fund matters like this. I can show up at council and suggest we spend money, but with a recommendation from the Environmental Sustainability Advisory Committee, it's not just Jeff's pet project at that point. It is something that residents have engaged in and supported on the basis of their own understanding of climate change and how it affects us here in Brighton. So very pleased to have those recommendations. We also recently engaged with Nature Canada through the committee. Nature Canada is a nationwide environmental organization, and they have a lot of different conservation projects across the country. And so, their proposal right now for a national marine conservation area, they've identified specific places around Lake Ontario and specifically near Presque Isle Point and Prince Edward County. And so, they wanted to make sure that they spoke to Brighton. And so, the committee was able to engage with them, read their report and recommendations, have a robust conversation at committee level, and then make a recommendation to council that council support Nature Canada's proposal. And then council then passed a resolution supporting that proposal and circulating our support to neighboring municipalities so that everyone around knows that we're on board.
So that's one example. Can you give me another?
We're a fairly new committee, and these things don't come up every day. And so I wish I could give you a ton of examples. We have had some challenges as well in terms of that there was recently an environmental sustainability issue or concern that was quite controversial in the community. And it was not referred to the Sustainability Advisory Committee.
What was that?
That was the matter of swans. I don't know if you heard about this, but there was concern in the community about swans as an invasive species that were we had biologists come to council and make a recommendation that we look into options for population control for swans because they frankly they poop 5 or 6 pounds a day each, and we have a few hundred of them in our marsh, and they take up a lot of space in terms of biological or ecological space within that ecosystem. And so biologists suggested that they were having an adverse effect on the marsh. There was a local group that had formed in support of the swans, and there was some misinformation, some suggestion that council had voted to cull the swans, which yeah, we absolutely had not done. But that was the word that had gotten around town. And I do feel that had that gone to the Environmental Sustainability Advisory Committee first, rather than going straight to council, a lot of that misinformation would have been able to have been addressed proactively. But when it comes down to it, council members are not biologists. And we should have relied on the expertise that is within our committee, because we have committee members who have experience with dealing with invasive species and would have been able to give a much better look at that issue. So these advisory committees are really important when we remember to use them well. And so we learned some lessons there and really underlined the importance of this committee.
When was that?
That was last year. It lasted almost all year.
How often does the committee meet?
All of our advisory committees typically try and have a minimum of 4 meetings a year. Some advisory committees really only meet as needed. 4 meetings a year is a baseline. If we have an issue come up, for example, when Nature Canada wanted to bring this proposal to us, we just call another meeting. And so I would say that the Environmental Sustainability Advisory Committee meets 6 to 8 times a year.
Because that's funny. I looked up your meetings and you missed July, October, and January. It was the first time since July that you actually met since July of 2024. Why such a big gap in between meetings? You're saying that if you meet that frequently, what happened between July and January that you weren't meeting?
I'm Pretty sure we had at least one meeting in the fall, but
Well, I saw minutes for October, so maybe you met in October, but still July, October, and then January. If you're
yeah.
meeting 8 times a year, is that
Well,
sufficient to be looking after these kinds of issues? Plus, you're taking on this environmental sustainability plan.
I should say that the Environmental Sustainability Plan or Integrated Community Sustainability Plan is being helmed by consultants, and there are staff who are dedicated to it. And so this is not something that the committee itself has to lead. The committee is one of the groups that is being whose expertise or opinion is being sought specifically as part of a larger public consultation process. So we were invited, for example, to the initial meeting with consultants that was with municipal staff, senior staff, and committee members. So we are part of things like that that aren't necessarily regular meetings, but those four ish meetings, baseline of four plus meetings a year, are there for regular check-ins and to make sure that there isn't something else that we've missed, an opportunity for committee members to bring things up. But of course, as chair, I can call a meeting whenever there's something that is pressing. And so any member of the committee could reach out, or even any member of the public could reach out and say, "Can you please call a meeting? I need to address something." We're always available for that.
Yeah, because I guess you've already missed one meeting, and then we haven't even made 3 months yet. So, anyway, how serious is this group about if they're mi missing? Let me move on. In July of 2024, that meeting, the committee recommended town staff do a report on rain barrels. What happened to that?
That came from a member of the public, a resident of Brighton, who had this idea of rain barrels. So the committee did a little bit of research and looked into what other communities do about rain barrels as a way of saving water. The information we received showed that there are a lot of rain barrel support programs in Alberta, some in Ontario, some in BC. And so we looked around and made some recommendations and passed those on to council. Rain barrels are a way of saving rainwater, reducing our reliance on municipal water sources. We have great municipal water source in Brighton, and so we don't necessarily need to conserve because we're running out, but it's always a good idea to conserve anyway. So we passed that on to council. Council supported it at budget time. We've set aside a little bit of money to have a rain barrel program, or at least to ensure that when staff put something together, that they will have resources that they can potentially draw on.
In our conversation, you've already alluded to the fact that the Environmental Sustainability Committee is going to be involved in the creation of this plan. But besides consultation, what do you see as being the committee's role going forward from that point?
Well, I One of the challenges in first forming the committee in the year before I was elected to council, we were looking at what is our role as a committee, because we can't necessarily be in charge of environmental sustainability. That's a very, very broad topic that no committee on its own could cover. And so we looked at, well, our role then needs to be to advise council, but also to come alongside community groups that are already active in this space. So, for example, there's the Friends of Presqu'île Isle, there's the Brighton Garden Club. There are numerous individuals and groups within the community who are already doing good work toward environmental sustainability, and we want to come alongside and support them. So, for example, last year, the ENSS Environmental Committee, which was made up of senior students who were very organized and hard at work on an Earth Day celebration in the park. We came alongside them and offered some support, a little bit of extra organizing, and we would do the same again. I understand that the ENSS and Environmental Committee this year is a younger group of students who were not in the same position to put on an event. And so I don't know that we're going to have an event this year, but those are the kind of initiatives that we can support, but not things that we would organize on our own, if that makes sense. We want to be able to be a liaison for these different groups to help them engage with each other and do maybe larger projects than they would do individually. And so if we can be a connector and a supporter and even a small scale funder for these kinds of initiatives from within the community, we want to do that.
But at some point, somebody's going to have to start rolling up their sleeves and implementing whatever the recommendations are out of that report. So who do you see doing that part?
Well, the Integrated Community Sustainability Plan, and then the climate mitigation plan that will follow it, which will be more aimed at reducing greenhouse gas emissions. Both of those will be specifically primarily aimed at municipal operations. And so every department in the municipality is going to be adding these approaches and even just lenses to the way that they already do their job. And so it's not so much that there's going to be a whole bunch of new projects as there's going to be new ways of doing the same old thing that these departments have always done, just in a greener, more efficient, or more perhaps more ambitious way to be more sustainable. But when it comes to the doing of things, that's one of the challenges of all advisory committees that I've been on, is that oftentimes the people who will put in an application to be on a resident advisory committee are the doers. And then we have to talk about what it means to be advisors rather than doers. We are not in a position as an advisory committee to do all of the things. We're primarily there to inform council on matters under that purview. So that's often challenging for residents who signed up because they have a passion for something, and sometimes because they have time on their hands or because they have specific things that they want to get done. And we have to look at, okay, well, how do we encourage council to do those things, or how do we bring these things before council to determine whether or not this is something the municipality can do? Or should we be looking to some of these other community groups and saying, hey, we love this thing that you're doing and we want to support that, and so we're going to help you do it a little bit bigger, a little bit better, any way that we can. So that's the challenge and the tension in all of our advisory committees, is that the doers want to do more, and we have to look at how can we do that effectively and sustainably.
If you follow the news at all, you have a sense of the great chaos that seems to exist right now.
Yes.
Canada is currently facing an existential crisis plus a trade war. We look internationally and there is a realigning of the world order. People have a lot of heavy-duty things on their minds. Is this really the best time to be making this kind of plan a priority?
Yeah, Rob, I would say this is not the best time. The best time was 50 years ago. The next best time was 30 years ago. As I said earlier, if we had implemented the Kyoto Protocols in the early 90s, we wouldn't be having this conversation at all. But in terms of what this requires of people, we're not adding anything to anyone's plate. By being proactive, we are taking things off our plates for tomorrow by doing small things today. So this Integrated Community Sustainability Plan will be there as something that can, as I said before, probably mostly invisibly prepare the municipality to deal with a changing climate, so that when we have unprecedented, we're living in these unprecedented times. We want to make sure that the next time we have unprecedented weather and unprecedented disruptions from it, that we're prepared to not be quite so disrupted. If we do this job well, you won't notice anything at all. I mean, of course, you'll still notice it, but it will not affect your lives as much. And so this is not a matter of we need to put more on people's plates. This is a matter of we need to be proactive and address things in advance so that they will disrupt us less later.
How real is the threat of climate change right now?
The threat of climate change continues to be, and I want to be cautious here because I went through a period of significant climate grief and anxiety and burnout myself. We are surrounded by constant sense of threat because we're constantly plugged into the news and we're hearing about wars on the other side of the world as if they were happening in our own communities. We're hearing about international politics as if it were happening right here in Brighton. And to some extent, because we're also interconnected, it is. But when we focus so much on threats, we burn out very easily. And I heard some interesting statistics talking about how people on social media are starting to exhibit actual significant trauma symptoms, just because of this cycle of threat that we're constantly putting ourselves through. And so I don't want to emphasize too much, but climate change continues to be a threat. I sometimes think of it as a chronic background threat. It's always there. And if we don't take significant action, it will become a serious problem. Right now, we're experiencing some small problems in terms of warming climates are already having a hard time on our roads. They're already making so many things harder. Some things like the increased prevalence of ticks. That's an impact of climate change that we've all noticed here. Everybody who walks their dogs in Brighton talks about it on the local Facebook group, how many more ticks they see. Things like that are minor threats of climate change that are already really annoying or potentially harming us. But we are on track as a world. We're on track for very significant disruption. And so, but we are not the whole world here in Brighton. We are Brighton. We are responsible for one town. We only got one. We can't change the world for New York or Shanghai. We just have Brighton. So let's do our part here in Brighton and rely on others to do their part too, trusting our neighbors and friends. And I know that's a hard challenge at times lately, feeling like some of our neighbors have been letting us down. But I think there's an inherent act of hope in doing your part, knowing that it will also improve the lives of others, and relying on others to do their part, knowing that it will improve your life as well. There's an act of faith in that that I think can be the basis for restoring relationships, even in troubling times like this.
Jeff Wheeldon, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you, Rob. It's always a pleasure.
That was Brighton Councillor Jeff Wheeldon. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at ConsiderThisNorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.